here we are with another episode of Inside Out, where we focus on Microsoft's partners. And today we have Andy Norris from Planet Technologies. Welcome.
Thank you.
So, obvious question, what is Planet Technologies? What do you guys do?
So we're a systems integrator, but the specialization we have is really taking all of the different pieces of the Microsoft technology stack and combining them, augmenting them to deliver business solutions to a broad range of customers, everything from the hosting community and the service providers through the U.S. federal government and, of course, commercial clients.
Interesting. Now, I noticed, having read just a little bit about your company before this interview, I normally don't do that too much to make it more conversational.
Yep.
You won the Microsoft Federal Partner Award. What does that mean?
Yeah. So actually, we won that 3 years running. So,
nice.
In 05, 06, and 07, we won Federal Partner of the Year awards from Microsoft. And in 06, we won the Public Sector Partner of the Year award from Microsoft. So it's a series of awards given out by the Federal Sales Organization for Microsoft for a number of different things, including obviously helping to drive a bunch of software pull through. So, you know, as a company that doesn't resell licenses, we sell a lot of licenses. So, you know, it's very easy for us to show through the work that we do the amount of new licensing that's been sold by, you know, to various different agencies, that kind of thing. One of the really interesting ones we did on the technology side was is probably what won us the Public Sector Partner of the Year award, was when Microsoft was struggling to compete with Google in the federal space on the search side of things. We built an appliance called the Prospector on SharePoint 2003, which we've updated to 2007. Which was a search appliance predecessor to Search Server Express. And that gave the, you know, all the reps out there in the market a competitive product they could put out.
Excellent. So let's talk a little bit about, because the domain that I usually spend my most time in is sort of the developer domain, right? And most of the people I interact with are software engineers, and we get geeky about platforms and APIs and stuff like that. What do you mean, like, what exactly, who's your audience when you say business customer? What does that mean?
So we have a lot of Fortune 500, very large companies that we've worked with. Actually find ourselves working a lot with companies that are growing very, very quickly and really need a platform that can be flexible and extensible to meet that requirement. So Under Armour is an example of one. Black & Decker and, you know, a number of those kinds of companies. The other one, of course, is companies with large legacy technology problems who really need to move off legacy platforms but still have accessibility to that data. And we do a lot of that, obviously, now with SharePoint 2007, is, you know, helping them to make that leap. United Airlines is a great example. Move that leap forward on their internet capabilities, accessing all of the different legacy data stores that they have, whilst not yet having the opportunity to decommission them because they are, you know, mission-critical apps that run on the back of their website, stuff like that.
Interesting. And so you build these solutions. So basically you build these proxy layer solutions on our platform.
Right, so leveraging stuff like the BDC and a bunch of the capabilities in MOS, we really become the hub to the wheel for their organization. So taking all of these legacy systems they wish they could decommission but really can't get there yet, and then being able to give them a better way to see the data that's within them, give it a better usability. I mean, the another obvious example is Oracle's Documentum. So a lot of people stuck with Documentum as a document management solution that they've had for a number of years, but the user interface is terrible on Documentum. Every customer that I speak to, you know, says that either nobody uses it or everybody, you know, decries how bad that user interface is. So it's much easier for them to access that data using SharePoint and a bunch of the stuff in SharePoint Search and the BDC.
Excellent. Now, SharePoint is one of those technologies, as interesting as it is, had an interesting start. I mean, the earlier versions of SharePoint must have been a little bit interesting for you to work with.
Yeah, there was a lot of opportunity in those early versions for augmenting the platform, because you could see the potential was there for the platform, but a lot of the capabilities were fairly basic in the kind of the basic portal document management kind of view of the world. But, you know, you had a lot of companies like K2.net and a bunch of other, you know, ISVs who were building, you know, workflow, for instance, in the K2.net example. What we did, the approach we took was actually to listen to what Microsoft was struggling in the market to address, and in particular search. So taking Taking that SharePoint 2003 platform, for example, mm-hmm. Adding in all of the iFilters to it, doing a bunch of augmentations to search, changing and modifying where you find the kind of search tweaking settings within SharePoint 2003, and bringing them all up front so that it had a real appliance feel to it. It was easy. You brought it in, you plugged it in, pointed it at what you wanted indexed, and it went and did it for all the file types you wanted. And in fact, the figures, we actually put it in an enterprise environment against a Google box, and we were expecting it to compete. It embarrassed the Google box
really?
For indexing speed, for delivered result relevancy. It was great. So we then came and worked with the SharePoint team here, actually using the team that we have based out of the Microsoft Partner Solution Center here, mm-hmm. Engaged with the Search Compete team that was brand new in mm-hmm. in the SharePoint space at the time. And help them with that story and understanding what we'd done and how we'd optimized it. And a lot of that went into that Search Server Express and the other three search products.
Great. So we need to get you guys over to Live Search so you can help them get their relevance up a little bit.
It's interesting because it's such a different market. I mean, Google are feeling this pain right now because in the marketplace, they're getting slammed by a lot of blogs and a lot of publications and a lot of customers because people expected Google Search to be what they got when they got the Google appliance behind their firewall. And it really, when it comes to competing in that behind the firewall with inside my enterprise space, Microsoft have a story that is just fantastic. It just really crushes the Google story for that.
Wow.
And of course, it's not a, lease it from us for 3 years deal. It's part of your infrastructure. It's part of your SharePoint. And when you take not just the search story, but all the other stuff you can extend with that SharePoint platform, so having search, then broadcast as RSS feeds or feed off into workflows, all those kinds of things that you can build on that SharePoint infrastructure, which is arguably an application platform at this point, it's not even close to a competition.
Interesting. Well, you mentioned application platform. Mm-hmm. Have you played around at all with OBA and the OBA Composer?
No, actually, we haven't got into that space. Okay. We have two spaces we're really pushing in very hard right now. Mm. One is pushing on the business apps side of the Surface appliance. The second is pushing really hard in the mashups on Virtual Earth on Surface and driving into that space. So between that and all of the Silverlight stuff we're preparing for in anticipation of the next version of SharePoint, it's a very interesting time in my dev labs, let me tell you.
Absolutely. So so you mentioned earlier that you are pretty much a 100% Microsoft shop.
That is all we do.
All you do. So let's talk about why is that the case?
Yeah, we've been around for about 9 years as a company. Mm-hmm. And from day one, we decided that Microsoft was the platform we were going to invest in. For a number of reasons. I mean, obviously, it's turned out to be a very good decision. Mm-hmm. We decided to go that way because a lot of the work that we'd done out with customers, not simply just the traditional desktop side of things and some of the servers at the time in the medium to low end of the large enterprise space, was already, as far as we're concerned, beginning to show a completely new cost of ownership model as far as enterprises were concerned. They weren't getting tied down to big metal anymore. They weren't having to think about five versions ahead and paying massive fees anymore. Mm-hmm. That low-cost, high-functionality model, as well as the flexibility of moving up through the versions and that increase in functionality, was a no-brainer for us when you consider you buy an enterprise agreement, you buy software assurance with that, and if you had software assurance on the 2003 suite and you moved up to the 2007 suite, the step-up in functionality across the board on all of the products was really just, it was unbelievable. In fact, we're running a huge campaign right now, actually focused predominantly on the US federal government and the DoD space, letting them know that 90% of them own most of what Microsoft sells. Mm-hmm. But typically, the deployment rates have been fairly low, in the 40% range at the top end. And that was on the 2003 suite. So now that they've all got the ability to buy the 2007 suite of products, you have just a massive enterprise capability in everything from SQL 2005 and now 2008, SharePoint Exchange 2007, Unified Communications. I mean, all of the capabilities you've now got in that new suite is vast, but they're just not getting the message. So we've been doing radio play and TV ads and all kinds of stuff. And that message is really taking off very, very strongly. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing a lot of great compete wins. So getting rid of a lot of Oracle on the database side of things, for instance. Mm. Getting a lot of people to get their Active Directory up to scratch because they're all going to leverage it very much in the same way as Microsoft do internally to really power a bunch of their systems.
Cool. So if you could do me a personal favor, could you please get more and more enterprises to install Vista?
It's funny you say that. So I have the title Worldwide Windows Vista Ambassador. It's one of the...
All right.
So I had to write a white paper to get myself that one. Got a nice holiday for that too, which was excellent. But a lot of the... it's very typical in the federal space, which is one of our focuses, but also in the enterprise space for the let's wait for Service Pack 1 attitude. Mm-hmm. We did a lot of work with the federal space organizations to say, guys, you've got federal mandates you need to meet that are around security, in particular around security. That really is a no-brainer as far as moving to Vista is concerned. And we did a whole bunch of work with the feds on that space. On the commercial side of things, we're seeing the same kind of uptick. Now, a lot of planning is going into making that move to Vista, and they're starting to go that way. So we're seeing the turning point coming, the inflection point, when people are starting to get rid of that XP legacy and move into the Vista space.
That's good, because there's these articles that was just released very recently where basically, pretty legitimate news organizations, mm-hmm. such as, Business Week? I mean, that's kind of a respectful, are declaring that Vista is dead in the enterprise. I mean, that's the headline. It's kind of like, and basically, it's just slow to uptake. What you had mentioned was when you go from features from 2003 to 2007, there's a huge amount of user features.
Yes.
When you go from XP SP2 to Vista, consumers and enterprises aren't really necessarily seeing the giant shift in features, though there are plenty of new features.
Yeah, and that's actually part of the discussion that we frequently have with people about that transition. Mm-hmm. If they come to us and they say, are you worried about the transition to Vista because of end-user impact? The answer is no. And we've seen in many cases where we've done Vista pilots, proof of concepts, and even enterprise rollouts, mm-hmm. that the impact of Vista is, in fact, very small. End users see a round button, they see better-looking icons, and they search for stuff instead of having to go programs, applications.
Exactly.
Through
love
the,
that.
Right,
yeah.
It's the best. It's the best. Having search everywhere in the platform was just gold. I don't know how I live without it. Oh. But that actually we find in the market is not what scares the end user at all, because they don't have to go through the break-in period that the home user goes through, like the first week when you're getting all the security messages. Do you want to permission this or do you not? That kind of thing, which is doing them a favor in terms of helping them have a more secure environment, but of course they don't see it that way. They just see messages pestering me. Mm-hmm. In the enterprise, you don't have that because you're putting out an image that you've already loaded and approved all the programs and everything's already been done. Mm. The power in that case comes from the back end, right, the administrative end, how much easier it is to secure and configure and how fewer add-ons you have to layer on top of it to make it safe. Mm-hmm. What really scares people when you make that upgrade is the Office 2007 change to the ribbon. Mm. One of the things that we're in our final test build of right now actually is a Silverlight education console that sits on the desktop and gives users who are moving to that Office 2007 platform a little, you've seen the idea of the video professor, right? Where it's a click-through video thing. Yeah. So this uses a similar kind of concept. But rather than being a walkthrough of a product, follow the mouse around kind of thing, it's divided into very small, very targeted snippets so that a user can say, okay, I want to know how to print. Okay, great. Well, it's the big round button up on the top right there is where all those things are hidden. And it's so many users, when they first start out, don't consider that to be a usable button, right? It's just an icon as far as they're concerned. So that's actually the biggest thing we found that is what people are struggling with, right? But at least that end-user argument is much easier to make because you show them what you can do in Excel versus what was possible in the old version of Excel and what you can do within PowerPoint with the inclusion of things like SmartArt. Mm-hmm. The end-user story is very, very easy to tell in that situation.
Sure. And that kind of leads into an interesting point around the notion of the need to innovate versus the need to be backwards compatible, not just backwards compatible and be able to run an application, but backwards compatible in usability and user experience.
Yeah.
So as you noted with Office 7, the ribbon was definitely a change. Like,
yes.
I click on this big button, and now, oh, that's where all my menu items
are. Right, and everything else adapts as I go.
Exactly. Now, but that's innovative, because it changes.
That is innovative, yeah. But I think if you look back historically at most platforms that have successfully changed over time and have been user-adopted and successfully so over a long period of time, you've seen the need to have functional richness mean that there has to be a basic user interface change of some way, shape, or form, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the move to Vista wasn't just for the sake of moving to Vista, right? The move to Vista was because we built it securely from the ground up, right? So Microsoft built it from the ground up with the trusted computing idea weaved all the way through it. The same with Office, the same with all of the server products in the 2007 iteration. So there's a reason at the back end why that's being done. Sometimes it's difficult for end users in particular, and for people who manage networks, sometimes it's very difficult for them to make the leap from why do I need to upgrade to the next version to, oh, okay, so it's more secure, it has a whole bunch of more features that we can use. For us managing users, and particularly mobile users in the case of Vista, it's an absolute no-brainer in terms of being able to secure and manage the platform, that if you have that, you know, that Windows Vista underpinning to users that are going to be a lot more mobile, and of course that's the truth of what it's going to be moving forward. Mm-hmm. It's got to be the way to go.
Outstanding.
So yeah, getting that message across is it's one of the big challenges.
Absolutely.
The most success we have doing it is doing it on a one to one, or we do live meetings and in person workshops on this kind of thing. But that's the struggle.
So what are, you know, when you go into these places, what's some of the kind of common feedback that you get from people? I mean, be they misconceptions or be they just, you know, honest concerns about our platform. So, like, what are some of the things that you normally have to deal with?
It's funny, actually, some of them are misconceptions. We recently did a SQL presentation for SQL 2005 and then what will be the transition to 2008. And what that will mean to people. And you know, most people out there are completely unaware that SQL 2005 in the last, you know, well, since it came out pretty much, hasn't had a single security patch. Haven't been any critical security patches for SQL 2005. Hmm. Oracle in the same period of time has had over 140. Hmm. But you can be sure that the Oracle reps are out there when they're selling, beating Microsoft up on security, because if you're going to beat up on Microsoft, that's kind of the soft spot, right, that historically they've been able to take. Mm-hmm. So redressing that balance in terms of making customers aware of the facts versus the marketing spin is always, a big thing for us. I go to a lot of these kind of, you know, meet and greet, shake hand kind of things. It's just kind of a function of my job. Mm. And I had a woman come up to me at one of these things. She was actually the wife of a guy that we do some business with. And she came up and she said, "So is it true?" And I said, "Is what true?" She said, is everybody leaving Vista and going to Mac?" She'd seen one of those ridiculous Mac commercials, right? Ah. And the fact that it was a well-marketed half-truth had absolutely no bearing on you know, the reality of the situation, but it was marketed well, so she believed it.
True.
And you know, so we spend a lot of time redressing those kind of myths or marketing spin or whatever in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of genuine concerns people have, the time they need to spend training their administrators to administer Vista properly is one of them, because you know, the number of security and configuration settings you have within Vista, and rightly so, is much broader. Mm-hmm. That was very cleverly addressed by the federal folks in the federal space. They worked with the folks at NIST and the Air Force and at the Office of Management and Budget and put together a federal desktop core configuration, a standard configuration of Vista that the whole federal government should roll out, with 600 security settings specified particularly for the federal government. Mm. So that took the how we meant to set it up. We don't know what the profile should be for our, you know, for our different machines, and you know, what are we doing over here, and how are we securing it over there? By contrast, all of that discussion went out of the window. It was just, this is what it is. It's done, and at the same time, that precluded Mac from being used in a lot of places within the federal government that had previously considered it, because Mac weren't about to spend the time helping the federal government, you know, build that secure configuration.
Interesting. Well, I mean, you know, people can use Macs as long as they're running Vista.
Right, right.
In fact, Vista runs great on a Mac.
It really does. Actually, I've seen it done. I was on a plane yesterday, and I blog about this quite often. It makes me laugh. You know, the people who spend a fortune on MacBooks, and the MacBook Air is the most ridiculous thing ever built. But they spend all that money on buying this Mac hardware, and then they just go and run PC software on it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, what was the benefit in buying a Mac? You know, you just paid a 300% markup on the hardware. Right? I mean, for the cost of a fully loaded MacBook Air, you can get six ThinkPads. I mean, and then, you know, the reason it makes me laugh is I was sitting on the plane behind a woman with a MacBook Air who was running Vista and Office 2007 for Mac on it. And I was just, you know, I was kind of laughing to myself. I was like, for the sake of it looking shiny and really thin, you spent, you know, $3,000 for a laptop.
Absolutely.
You could have picked up a similar spec PC-based laptop for $600 to $700. It was
true.
Just, it's so ridiculous.
Of course, the only argument I can see for that would be the notion of because Windows is designed, unlike Mac OS, to support, you know, as you well know, a number of hardware configurations.
Yep.
I mean, by design. That's where our smartness is, right?
Yeah.
The drivers were not developed quick enough because we kept delaying and changing and delaying. And so the hardware driver manufacturers got a little, I guess you could say, lazy. I mean, that's not really fair to say that, but they got a little bit behind. And so
there was about a six-month turnaround period for those
to get those drivers
rewritten to be there, right?
You got it. Whereas on the Mac, you know, only Apple writes drivers for the Mac,
right?
And so they had those things tested, and they only had a few drivers. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of an interesting thing. I'm not telling people go ahead and get a Mac. You want to run Vista. It looks cool,
right?
But yeah, and you spend a lot of money, but it's interesting.
And yeah, I agree, you know, it's also one of the things that people don't really give Microsoft any credit for, and it's one of the things that I think you really have to understand the complexity of software to realize the kind of expertise and the kind of ingenuity it takes to be able to write an operating system to run on whatever generally specified in this way PC platform you want to run, with a multitude of manufacturers' different pieces all running within it.
Exactly.
That is a much, much more difficult task than, okay, we build the hardware, we build the software, and as a result, we're going to sell it to you at a huge premium, right? It's not even close.
Exactly.
So,
perfect. So I want to ask you a question about, you're at the MS Partner Solutions Center.
Yeah.
You spend a fair amount of time there. I want to get your feeling of your experience there and what you do there precisely.
Yeah. And we have a team based there all the time.
Ah.
And we have an office there. We help with some of the running of the MPSC from a functional day-to-day perspective. But where it really comes into its own and where we really find that we get the best out of the MPSC is it's a hub for all of the good innovative partners of Microsoft to come together in a single place. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, one of the things we do is to augment the Microsoft platform very, very aggressively. And help, you know, with things like integrating. We even do stuff like building MOM packs for stuff, right? So there are a couple of vendors over there right now that are based out of the MPSC that build some really innovative storage solutions that really scale very well. We help them build the MOM pack for their stuff, right? So, you know, it's similar with the MTCs. We do a lot of work with the MTCs at various other places in the technology centers in other places in the country. Microsoft provides such a wonderful product stack, but it's so extensible that the partner community, particularly on the ISV and the hardware side, tend to build around it.
Mm.
Building around it has its own set of challenges.
Mm-hmm.
One of the ways we stay ahead of our competitors in the market is to be aware of those, you know, all of those solutions within the marketplace, all of the various different partner add-ons, the, you know, all Microsoft dedicated solutions, and be able to weave ourselves into that story from a delivery perspective. So if you're having, you know, trouble with an EMC setup, right? Then in many cases, EMC or a bunch of their clients will pay for us to come in and help to troubleshoot that. Well, some of those clients are absolutely bleeding edge in terms of their adoption. But in many cases, the guys at whatever the hardware vendor or ISV happens to be aren't quite at that bleeding edge. The work we do here out of the MPSC actually gives us exposure to most of those Microsoft technologies from the different product groups as part of the TAPS, but also those associated technologies that are going to run up against those new releases, those new versions, against the app compatibility, against everything else.
Mm.
So the way that we stay ahead is by working in that partner solution center with all those other partners, and of course with the product teams that are based around here on campus. And it means that as soon as a new release of a product hits the market, we've already had, you know, between 5 or 6 months experience of that product and deploying that. The other thing we also do out of the MPSC here is actually we do work on Microsoft's behalf for Microsoft as a corporation, delivering on infrastructure upgrades. Particularly before MOS released, for instance, we migrated about 40,000 users or so of Microsoft-owned users from the 2003 across to the 2007 suite.
Nice.
And that, you know, this acts kind of as the end of the funnel for us, in terms of collecting all of that intelligence about how things work, how they're going to be in the next iteration, the lessons that need to be learned, and those things get funneled down to all of the engineers that we have across the US and also out of our European office. And they can take those to market and walk into a customer day one that it's available for download under their software assurance and say, okay, you should move to this. This is why you should move to it. Mm-hmm. These are the new features. And this is the reason you should adopt it more quickly.
Outstanding. Well, hey, thank you very much for the work that you do, and keep on innovating.
That's our pleasure. Absolutely.
Much appreciated. Cool. Thanks. Nice to meet you.
And you. Thank you.
Cheers. Click.